devo dire che nel no.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show tonight. A few people in the chat already, if I can pull it up. Tiger, Denise, Plan B made it, finally got hooked up on YouTube. At any rate, welcome to the show tonight. Most of you know I'm putting together my solar power station, and I finally got that basically complete. There's a couple things that I need to finish on that, but it's basically good to go, other than a few more solar panels outside. But I've got a couple of videos that I'm putting together, and tonight I'm going to play a couple of those that are sort of the rough cut before I put some lipstick on the pig and throw them on YouTube. The first video is about why I'm doing it and what my plans are in the future as far as upgrading it. And then the second one is the build itself, all the different components that I put together and how it's all going to work. Like I said, it's sort of a little bit raw, but you'll get the idea, and I'll fancy it up and throw it on YouTube. Before we get into the show, though, this week, I wanted to mention that in the next month or so, hey, Nikos, how's it going? Gun Pilot, what's going on? I wanted to mention over the next month or so, Lisa just had rotator cuff surgery. So she is my captive audience. So I'm probably going to have her on a couple shows. She's basically home for the next month or so. So I'm probably going to try to get her to come on for a couple shows and talk about some medical stuff or, things like that. If she doesn't, then I'm not going to clean up after her horses and be her, her gopher all the time. So basically she has to, but at any rate, she is going to be on a couple times, and tomorrow's her birthday actually. But she's going to be on a couple times in the next few weeks or so, at least once. I want to get her on. Should be a fun show. Also tonight, along with my solar charger, we're going to talk about something that Jammer had brought up in the group, which is members.survivalistprepper.net, about a podcast that he had listened to a little while back. And the podcast was, let me see if I can pull this up here. The podcast was Prepper Talk Radio. And I've listened to a little bit. These guys seem pretty cool. But they were talking about your prepper kryptonite, or what is your preparedness kryptonite? What are those things that, regardless what you do, that's going to be that thing that really derails your plans or changes your plans? And we've talked about this a few times. They've actually got a YouTube channel as well, which is I've watched a couple of their videos. They actually do some live streams, so maybe I'll get in touch with these guys and see if they want to do something together as well. But I have the link to their website down below, and you can just go to Apple or any of the podcasting places and listen to their podcast. But what I plan on doing is talking about that. There was a lot of really good comments when he posted that in the group, and I want to go over some of the comments we got. A lot of, everybody talking about what their challenges are, their prepping challenges and things like that. So very, very cool topic. And I'm going to have to listen. I haven't listened to that podcast from them yet, but I'll have to listen to that tomorrow and see what their thoughts on the whole subject were. Just a really cool way to word it. Your prepper kryptonite, your prepping kryptonite, rather than like, what are your prepping challenges and things like that. Just kind of a cool way to word it. One more thing with the bug out location, the membership website, and that's bugoutlocation.net. I have some plans. I'm sort of stretched thin here with the Survivalist Prepper website, the SHTF shop that I run, which I sell Legacy Foods. And then I've got the podcast. I've got the YouTube channel. I've got the Bug Out Location membership website. What I think I'm going to do, because I sort of ignore the Bug Out Location while I'm doing all this other stuff, so I think I'm going to consolidate a little bit. I'm not going to give up on Survivalist Prepper, but I think I'm going to do articles and things like that over at the Bug Out Location that are for the public. And then there's going to be a lot that aren't for the public that are just for members. That way I get it all in one spot and not ignore it. That doesn't mean I'm going to ignore Survivalist Prepper. I'll still post the show notes and things like that over at Survivalist Prepper. Probably gear reviews, things like that. It'll just be back and forth. But I want to focus more energy and attention on the Bug Out Location membership website rather than all this other stuff. So I got to figure out which direction to go and pick that direction and you know, do more work over there. So at any rate, that'll be it sometime here in the near future. Also, one more thing with a group, the members.survivalistprepper.net, which is an extension of the Bug Out Location. I know I've talked about this like for a couple months, but we are going to be doing video calls over there, group meetings, and I'll even be doing some live streams and a movie night type thing over there. That is coming too. I've just been so focused on this solar charger once I get my mind on something, once I start doing something, everything else just sort of falls by the wayside and I forget about it. I get consumed by it and have to get it finished, which is ironically, why I don't drink anymore either. I'm all in. Either I'm all in or I'm all out, one or the other. There is no in between with me. At any rate, what I want to do now is talk. I've got a couple videos, like I said, of this solar charger. And what I want to do is I'm going to play this first video, which talks about why my plans for this, why I set it up and what it's going to be capable of and what I want to do in the future. And then after that, I wanted to talk a little bit about what are some of those important preparedness supplies, those things that you'd want to be able to generate power for, whether that's solar power, whether that's fuel like propane, wood. I mean, all those things. We're coming into winter now. And for most of the country, a lot of the country, unless you're one of the lucky ones that live down south, we're looking at snow, ice, cold weather, all of that. Whereas if you're in the south, this is probably your, the good time of year when you get sort of a rest from all the super hot heat and all that stuff. So, but for most of the country, we are headed into winter. So heating becomes an issue. And even down south for some people the heat can be just as bad as the extreme cold. So, but at any rate, let me go ahead. I'll play this video. If anybody has any questions, I'll glance through the chat and maybe I'll pin them and we'll talk about them after this video is over. But like I said, after this video is done, I also want to talk a little bit about some of those supplies that might be important. And then we'll get into the build itself, all the different components on there. So let's go ahead and play this, the first video right here. All right. Hey there, everyone. I want to do a couple things today. I want to walk through how I set up this build. But before I get into all the components and everything, I want to talk a little bit about why I set it up this way and what I plan on doing in the future. Now, with this, Renergy sent me this 1,000-watt inverter, pure sine wave inverter. They also sent me this battery down here, which is a 100-amp-hour smart battery. Both fantastic products, and I decided I would go with all Renergy on this product. So I purchased one of the Rover 30 amp charge controllers, which is a little bit large for this, but I'll go into that later. And then I also purchased one of the 100 watt solar panels, which is again just a starting point. So what I want to do is sort of talk a little bit before I get into the build. I want to talk a little bit about what this can do and what my plans are in the future. Now, we'll start with the 100 amp hour battery, and 100 amp hour battery is, I believe, 1200 and some watts. And this is a decent battery for things like, a little tablet right here, charging a few things, but nothing that you're restricted to 125 amps on this is their max. So 125 amps times 12, which will give you your wattage, you're looking at 1500 watts max that you can pull from this battery. So there are some things, for most things, 100 amp hour battery is going to work. There are some things that are 1800 watts that are just not going to work with this. Now, if you added another 100 amp hour battery to this, you'd be up to 3000 watts that you could pull, which would be plenty. The inverter itself, pretty self-explanatory. You can run 1000 watts through it. Usually the startup amps, our startup power is double that. So 2000 watts to get something running, and then it goes down to whatever its rated current is.
So 1,000 watts is, you know, it's decent for things like this, but if you wanted to run a hot plate, if you wanted to run anything that was 1,800 watts, it's going to be tough to do that with a 1,000-watt inverter. So I plan on upgrading this 1,000-watt inverter to a 2,000-watt inverter. Now, this charge controller right here is 30 amps, and right now I have one 100-watt solar panel. With one solar panel, you're going to get probably 6 watts or 6 amps, which if we do this again, 6 times 12, you're looking at 72 watts an hour that you're going to be getting. And then 72 watts by, let's say, 8 hours. This, if you get a perfect day, that's 576 watts you're going to get from a solar panel. So that is basically, in perfect conditions, I can fill up this 100 amp hour battery 50%, probably more like 40%. Or think about it, I can use about 40% of this 100 amp hour battery. And that's where it gets a little bit, when you're sizing your system, there are two things you really need to pay attention to. The battery itself is what you're going to spend the most money on. So it's good to get a good quality battery. And that really is dependent on you and your situation. But also, you've got to think about the ability to generate electricity. So to be able to replenish the electricity that you're using. So once you calculate how much you're going to be using on a daily basis, that's where your solar panels come in. One 100-watt solar panel, like I said, 500 watts throughout a day is almost nothing. I mean, it's really small. So what you would want is, what my plans are in the future is, I've got another little setup that I'm going to add 140 more watts to it, which will give me 240, which is, I'm thinking probably, you know, 11, 12 amps of electricity coming through. And if you, we go back to our handy dandy little calculator here. So let's say we're getting 12 amps times 12 watts. And that means 144 watts an hour. So, and then we'll go times 8 hours, like I said, perfect day. We're looking at filling up this entire battery right here, pretty close to filling it up. That's without using it at all though. So if I were to use this during the day, or during the night, the next day I could replenish what I used during the night. It's really, it's really, there's a lot of math involved in all this stuff. But the main things with, like I was talking about, the main things with this is a good quality battery, because that's where most of your money's going to go. And your ability to generate the power is really going to be a factor in how long this will last. A lot of the portable generators, even this one right here, would be great in a power outage or something that lasted a day or two. It's going to be just fine. Something that goes on longer than that, and even, you know, off grid, and anybody that's completely off grid understands how many solar panels you need. But something that goes on longer than that, you're going to need to be able to bring in more power than you're using, and not just in perfect condition. Sometimes you're going to have cloudy days. If it's stormy out, it could be 3 days until you get some sun. So it's really tough when you're talking about large appliances and things like that. A mini fridge will run, I think they're about 100 watts. So with a mini fridge, 100 watts, let's say you run it, you know, you want to keep that on 24 hours a day. So you've got a mini fridge that takes 100 watts, and you want to do that 24 hours a day. So you're looking at 2,400 watts. You'd need to be able to generate 2,400 watts. And like I was talking about with one solar panel, you're looking at probably 250 watts a day right there. So you're at 250 watts, you're talking about 9, 10, maybe 11, you know, solar panels to be able to run that little mini fridge all day long. So it takes a lot of energy. In a situation like this, and what I'm using for, this is an emergency type solar generator setup to run a few lights, like the lights I have on here. Maybe, you know, the light over there. Maybe a little laptop or tablet to be able to watch some movies. Maybe a hot plate to use a half an hour a day. Once for lunch, breakfast, once for dinner. Things like that. It's not going to be something I'm going to use to keep the electricity on, keep my refrigerator on all day long, or, you know, things like that. It's just, if you're going to do something like that, that's where you go completely off grid. That's where you put a big investment, and we're talking tens of thousands of dollars. You put a big investment into it to be able to do things like that, where you wouldn't even miss a beat if things were bad for a month or so. But with this, that this is a totally different setup. It's an emergency setup. What I plan on doing with this is expanding this a little bit, maybe getting a few batteries, maybe getting 2,000, you know, maybe even higher than that inverter. I'm restricted to 30 amps right here, which isn't bad at all, because you think about if we do 30 amps times 12, you're looking at 360 watts an hour times 8 hours a day. Again, perfect condition, 2,900 watts that I can use and replenish. So basically I could use twice as much as this battery capacity. So I could figure out with that equation right there how much energy I can pull while maintaining the status of that battery, because if you use less energy than what you're bringing in, you're going to raise the level of the battery. If you use more energy than what you're bringing in, that battery is only going to last, depending on how much you're using, a day, 2 days, and then you're going to have to not use it for a day to let it charge back up. So the more solar panels you have, the longer this system is going to last, basically. And that's why I'm going to expand my solar capacity. And that's why I got this 30 amp charge controller right here, so I can expand it. And it's really up to you and what your needs are for, or what your wants are for that setup. You need to go through a list of things that you're going to run in an SHTF situation, how long you're going to run them, and how much that energy that's going to take. And that will tell you how many batteries that you need, 100 amp hour batteries, or maybe a 240 amp hour battery, how many solar panels you need. You need to make sure, right now my solar panels are set up in the backyard where it gets sun all day long. I had to get a cord right here that goes 40 feet out into the backyard, but that's where it's sitting right now, and it gets sun. As soon as the sun comes up, the sun peaks over our house and goes down, and it gets sun all day long as the clouds are letting it. So with that, let's go ahead and get into, I want to talk about this build right here and what you need to do. I'm going to keep this as really simple. There are a lot of different equations. There are a lot of different factors that go into this. I want to make this as understandable as possible. And then you can sort of go down those rabbit holes about what size fuses and what size wires and all the different things that go into that. I'm just going to explain step by step how this is set up.
So that's what the plans are for the future. And plan B in the chat said math sucks. And yeah, it does. And for everyone that is listening to this podcast, not watching the video, during the video, those calculations were like peak, like the best that you can expect out of these. It's more the exception than the rule when you're talking about solar. That means you would have to be out there once an hour changing the alignment, making sure that for the time of year that it was set at the right degrees. That little stand that I showed that I have outside my 100 watt solar panel on, I've actually got it set up to there's one bar below it that's about 30 degrees, which is summertime here, whereas winter is 45 degrees. So you would have to, you're not going to get the max power all the time. So those numbers were just because math sucks and it's really hard, and I just wanted to make it really easy. The refrigerator as well, like I talked about, with a mini fridge running at 100 amps, where a full size fridge, you're looking at 700, 800, 900 watts. I mean, not amps. You're looking at 700, 800, 900. A hot plate, you're looking at 1200, 1300, 1500, whatever it is. So that with a mini fridge, that 100 watts is not constant. It's just when it brings it up to temperature and then the motor shuts off for a little while, depends on how many times you get in and out of it, and then it brings it up to temperature. So with a setup like this, you wouldn't want to try to run a fridge, a large fridge 24/7. You wouldn't want to, one hot plate. I've got a hot plate that takes about 1,100 watts. I tested it out on this, and this inverter, this 1,000-watt inverter, actually handled it. But if I would have 1 hour to use that with a 100-amp-hour battery. So this setup is more for the smaller things, the lights, the things, the essentials that you're really going to need in a situation like that. So one other comment I wanted to show here, Tiger said, about the inverters. He said, I have different inverters that run different things, and I only push the inverter to half its advertised rating. If you run them hard, it'll make them hot, and sometimes just plain old fail. Yeah, that's a very good point there. Sometimes the bigger the inverter, the more energy it's going to take too. So if you've got a 2,000-watt inverter, and you're running a 40-watt fan or something like that, you're wasting a whole lot of energy. So having a few different kinds, you can get the alternating, or the pure sine wave is more expensive than the alternating sine wave, or whatever they call it, step sine wave, I've heard it called sometimes as well. Those are a whole lot cheaper, but you don't want to run sensitive electronics with it. TVs don't work well with alternating or step sine wave. Medical equipment, things like that. You want that pure sine wave. But there are a lot of things, lights and things like that, that will work with those lower cost inverters. So make sure, yeah, if you get a few different sizes, a few different kinds, it's perfect. So, I wanted to talk a little bit, like I said in this is not a complete off the grid. Like even if you make a 400 or 500 watt hour battery, it's not going to be something that is going to get you through a super long-term disaster type situation. It is not an off-grid setup. And there are people out there, I guarantee, that have off-grid setups and know exactly what I'm talking about. It takes a whole lot more than that. Along with that, with solar, you're sort of at the whim of Mother Nature. So it works great in some places. In some places, it wouldn't work all that well at all. So, like this year, we had a crazy summer, crazy spring and crazy summer this year. It rained for almost a month straight. So, me having to depend on solar during that time frame would have been a joke. It would have been almost impossible. There is probably 2 or 3 days in between all that mess that I would have had a chance to somewhat recharge things, but it was still overcast and cloudy and all that. Oregon, Washington, those states that are cloudy quite a bit, solar may not be the best option for you. Wyoming, I know is there's parts of Wyoming that are pretty windy, and states all over the place. You know, having a turbine, something like that, may be a better option than having solar. But there's also the options that I want to talk about as far as like propane and different things. Those things that will, that fuel that you can have that will run a couple of different things. And I think of when you're thinking about how long you're going to have to go in a grid down situation. You know, preppers, we always tend to go Teotihuacan, right? Worst case scenario, this is going to be, you know, if an EMP happens, we could be down for, you know, a year or so, maybe even longer than that. I don't know how feasible that is. I mean, and I'm not talking about the EMP aspect. I'm talking about the time frame, because without electricity, if the grid was down in this country, that's a huge vulnerability for the powers that be, the people that are running the show. They don't want that. They could care less about me and you having electricity, but they don't want that. So there could be times when I can see scenarios that are more likely that a month, maybe, 2 weeks, something like that. Or depending on where you are, it could be 3 months, something in that time frame when you're talking completely off the grid, no electricity, no internet, no anything. Because I think as much as as much as they don't care about us, they would really want to get this stuff back online because it's the economy, it's everything that, you know, keep that hamster wheel moving is what they need to do. So I just think that a complete grid down situation that lasts, I just don't see one lasting longer than a few months. Doesn't mean it's not possible, but it's not very likely, I don't think. So when you think about it that way, what types of things, you know, would you need to run for a month or so? What types of things could you be able to regenerate? And this goes into the prepper kryptonite topic that we're going to cover later on. Those things that the longer something goes on, the harder things will be. Sure, you'll be able to adapt to certain things, but there are going to be things that you are going to have to adapt and change and not use and all that. And I think solar is that renewable energy, which is nice for that. But again, it's not something that you can 100% completely depend on in an SHTF situation, depending on where you are. If you're down in Texas, New Mexico, maybe you can. If you've got enough ability to generate a whole lot of power and then store that power, maybe you can. But for most of us, like this little one that I've got right here, it's not for a long-term situation. This is a 100 amp hour battery and a 2000 watt inverter, which I plan on going up to, and 200 amp hours of battery power. That's something that will keep the lights on for a week. That's something that will, even if I have to use a hot plate for half an hour a day, which is, you know, still a lot of juice out of those batteries. But if I needed to boil water, if I ran out of propane or things like that, it would be that sort of backup power, that power that I could regenerate and use further on down the line. Whereas propane, if things go that bad, propane could be gone. You can't use anymore. Wood, you know, as long as you've got a means to get it, if you live by a bunch of trees and things like that, you can, you know, the fire is always an option. But just things that we need to think about, those little things. I think it was Denise who said in the group, I'd posted I started this little thing called, is this a prepper supply or not, or that's not a prepping supply. And I put a little countertop ice maker on there, which is not a prepping supply, but it would be a luxury in a, you know, grid down event that lasted a couple days. But she put in there, at any rate, the comment she put was food, water, and shelter. And those are the main things that we need to think about in any sort of disaster situation, emergency situation, power outage, whatever it is. Those are the three main things. Without those, everything else is sort of, you know, not pointless, but it everything else moves down if you don't have those. You need water, you need food, you need all that stuff before anything else. So if you don't have those, that is your main priority at that point. So that was a very good point. And when we're thinking about being able to power things, we're not going to be able to power the whole house, most of us, almost all of us. But there are things that we will need to power. So a couple of those, if you guys have any thoughts in the comment section as well, make sure post something in there. I believe it was, I can't remember who it was in the group, but they were talking about Mr. Buddy, the Mr. Buddy heater. And I believe, and I was going to pull up the link and I spaced it out, but I believe their 9,000 BTU unit is safe to use indoors. And that is a little propane heater, which would be fantastic. And I believe they're like $100. Gun Pilot, I don't know if you're talking about this, but he said, we just got one and got one to store. Yeah, there's not a lot of options when it comes to heating indoors. If you've got a fireplace, that's great. We've got a wood burning stove, which is fantastic. It you know, and that could solve a couple of different problems. A fireplace, you're talking about boiling water, you're talking about heating the home, cooking, you know, a Dutch oven, things like that. A fireplace is something great, absolutely great to have. But you could also do that outdoors. I think Walmart probably sells fire pits. You can get a fire pit, throw that in the backyard. We've got, I got one for, as a gift a long time ago and use it occasionally, but it just sits out in the backyard. Hell, you could even dig a hole and make your own fire pit for that, making food or doing whatever. I had even talked about way back when Texas had that freeze. That unexpected freeze that they never get, and people were caught off guard, which all of us should be ready for this stuff, but they were caught off guard. There were people that would, there were people that died from carbon monoxide poisoning because they'd get in their car, start it up just to get the heater going. And I don't know if they were in their garage or what they were doing, but, you know, not a good idea. But I was even, I talked about in a show a while ago with Brian Duff, that the survival preppers, about if I was in a situation like that, I would probably put a tent or something like that in the backyard, figure out something, get a fire going outside, funnel that heat into me as without the smoke and all that, would do whatever I could to be able to warm myself. So it would almost be a situation where going outside to get warm in that weather may be better than staying inside in the icebox. So we just need to think about things like that, especially with winter coming up, you know, thinking about the things, the heaters, the water is another one, water filters. I've got a reverse osmosis water filter. It's a Sempure water filter that runs on like 40 watts. So with this solar generator I have, with this battery I have, and I'm going to go into the build here real quick, but I've also got it set to where I can charge it with AC. So with that, I can filter a whole bunch of water with a 100 amp hour battery. Now, I've also got water stored because I wouldn't want to, all the water that we need for cooking and drinking and all that, I wouldn't want to have to run it through that filter first. Plus, it would just waste the filters. I do have water stored as well, but that's another thing you'd need to think about, how you're going to filter water if you need to. How are you going to, if you've got a lot of long-term food or you're cooking spaghetti, things like that, how are you going to boil that? And that's where the propane, those little buddies that I was talking about, I believe that they've actually got an adapter where instead of that little 1 pound propane tank, you can actually put a 20 pound tank, which is the ones you put on your gas grill, a 20 pound tank, which I believe lasts on a propane grill. I believe it lasts like 20 hours, something like that. So on the little buddy, I was looking at it, and on the high setting on one of those little buddies, those 1 pound cans of propane, they last 3 hours or 6 hours on the low setting. So if you put a 20-pound can on that, you're looking at 60 hours or something like that on the low setting. So you're looking at a few days. So Utah Mike said rocket stove is most efficient. Yeah, rocket stoves are fantastic. Those solo stoves are pretty cool as well, but a little expensive. I've wanted one a while back, and yeah, I've sort of lost my want for one of those, but they are pretty freaking cool. But rocket stoves, absolutely. And there's DIY options, a lot of that. So those are the things. My whole point with this, and I'll play this next video, but those types of things, and Nikos was even saying here, a can of sardines or a can of tuna, he said, as long as it's in olive oil, that'll burn for a couple hours. Yeah, I've got this Vesta Instafire back here as well. You can heat indoors. It's got the Sterno cans. I've got a bunch of Sterno cans over there where you can actually cook things on. Just all those different options. It's not all solar. It's not all one thing. It's having all those different options. When one thing fails, you can go to the next thing. And as preppers, that's what we love to do, is learn about all these different things, because who knows? You know, it may come, you know, we're on our deathbed or whatever, and we've never had to use any of this stuff, all this knowledge floating in our heads. But there may come a day that we're damn glad that we do have this knowledge. And I think that's what it's all about. Even if it's just something minor that we can get through, or even if it's something really minor and we just want to play and see, you know, how is this, test our stuff, how is this going to work out in that situation? It's all the same thing. So really important stuff, I think, anyway, and I think a lot of you out there agree as well. Just really important stuff to know and think about, you know, what are my options? What could I do in this situation, that situation, whatever it may be? And you'll be far better off than the average person out there. So at any rate, a lot of different, you know, just think about all the different options, especially when you're thinking about the food, water, and shelter, all those things. You need to be able to cook the food, for a lot of it anyway. Sure, you can open up a can of SpaghettiOs and chow that, but there's a lot of things that you would need to cook for that. So with that, you need to think about the energy sources and how you're going to do that. with heating your home or cooling your home, same thing. That's where cooling your home, that's where I was, what I was talking about with that ice maker. That would be kind of convenient if the power was just out, you knew it was coming back on in a couple days. You run that sucker, get some ice, put that ice in a, I've seen some DIY little AC units where you just grab a hose or a vent, a aluminum vent, and cut a hole in the cooler, put some ice in it with a fan on it, and it blows that cool air out, which looks kind of cool. Guarantee you that would be heaven if you were sitting in your hot box house in the middle of the summer, and inside your home, you're talking 90, 95 degrees. One, having a little bit of ice, and two, sitting in front of that little cooler would be heaven. So my whole point is you got to think about all those different things. It's the smaller stuff, I think, that is more important than trying to figure out how you're going to withstand some sort of year-long event and still have all the things that you want towards the end of that event, because or the end of that situation, because there's so many variables that go into that when you're talking a year long that who knows. So Redneck AC Gun Pilot said, yeah. I've been wanting to try that, do a video on that for the longest time, and I just never have. There's always something else that comes up, but that would be kind of cool, because I'm always curious. All of these videos with people doing those things, they look really cool on YouTube. And when you're watching a video and you're like, oh, I could do that. That looks pretty cool. You know, that would be pretty neat and pretty cool to have. But do they work as well as, you know, that you think they do or that they say they do? So that's why I like to test out those things myself and see how they work. But I'm jumping in the middle of some conversations here. So they're talking about oils and things like that. But at any rate, what I want to do now, I'll let you guys continue your conversation. Mario said, real quick here, Mario said, swamp cooler if you're in the desert. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, that becomes that necessity, right? Because if you live in climates like that, you've got to. I hate the heat. I don't much like the super cold. I love the snow, but I really don't like the booger freezing cold. You know, if you live in the cold, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But I really don't like the heat, because it's a whole lot easier to get warm. Put a couple coats on, put 3-4 coats on, a blanket, whatever. It's a whole lot easier to get warm than it is to get cool. And that's, you know, I'd much rather live in a climate that gets cold like Colorado than down in, you know, down in Mexico or you know, anywhere like that, Arizona, things like that. You know, this time of year, it's probably great. And, you know, me saying that, Lisa and I are talking about moving to Texas too. So, you know, there's that. But at any rate, what I want to do now is play this second video where this is how I put the whole unit together. And I'm going to write an article that goes through all the different things that I used on this. It goes into more detail about the wire sizes and the fuse sizes and things like that. This is more just the components I used and how they go together. If you wanted to build your own, this is how you would put the pieces of that puzzle together. Now, there's a lot more that goes into it as far as sizing it and what your needs are and what sort of energy you're pulling in, all of those things. But this is just the basic, hey, this is how you put the pieces together. So Utah Mike said no to Texas. Who knows anymore with the way that things are going, and Texas is not the place it used to be and all that stuff. And I don't know if that's what you were commenting on, but yeah, Denise is down in Texas. Actually, Denise said here in the chat, Texas 6 months, Ohio 6 months. Yeah, that's, you know what? That's pretty good. And I don't know if this is the way you do it, but when it gets, Ohio gets cold, and they get that freezing rain crap that, you know, you get on a road and you're on a little hill and your car just takes off by itself and you're, there's not a damn thing you can do about it. So being in Ohio for the, you know, the summertime maybe, and then going down to Texas in the wintertime, that would be something cool. Although that means two houses, and I don't know if that's in the cards for us, but, at any rate, I'm going to go ahead and play this second video with the solar power station, and then we'll get to the prepper kryptonite stuff. I got to find the video. Here we go.
First, we'll start with what I initially set this up as. I got this dolly right here. I first started out with this collapsible dolly that I used for my old solar setup. And this folds down and these fold out. And I just really wasn't I really wasn't confident in how this was going to do. It did fit perfectly, but because this is collapsible, with the weight of that, it could have folded down. So what I decided to do was use a one solid piece dolly. This is rated at 600 pounds, a Milwaukee dolly. And I've got it strapped onto this with a couple of zip ties, and I'm going to add a couple more as well. I'm going to add a few different things to this whole solar setup right here. But I strapped it onto that, and then I used this four foot tall by 2 foot wide piece of particle board, which is a lot cheaper than plywood, and it's just fine for this. This is a semi-temporary setup. I plan on maybe installing this in my, I've got a wall in my garage that would be perfect, that I can drill a hole and it goes straight out to the backyard. I can run a cord to the solar panels and it would be perfect. The garage, I could run an extension cord inside or do whatever I need to do. But this is something that until I get the money and the time to expand this, this is going to be where this lives right now. So I didn't bother painting it or anything like that. So once I decided on this dolly and all that, I put the battery on down here and I put a strap around this battery right here with some, just drilled some holes through there and fastened that to the dolly itself. That way it's not going to, this battery is going to act as a little bit of a weight balance right there. And then put on the charge controller and the inverter right here. Now, to start off explaining how I put this together, I want to start here with the bus bars, because the bus bars are basically an extension of your battery terminals right here. That's what they are. So as soon as you install bus bars, that replaces your battery terminals. And the reason these are important, or depending on your setup, you might need them, is because you don't want 14 things connected to your battery all on top of each other right there. This bus bar allows you to bring different electronics in without having to go all the way down to the battery. So you can see I've got the battery set up right here. I've got 125 amp fuse, which this is max 125, 130 amps. I may even put that to 150 amps. I'm not sure. I had that one, so I put it on there. And then it goes to a power switch right here, which you can turn off the power. You can see everything turned off there. Okay. All right, now everything's back on. So you can turn the power off. That way you can work on different components up here without having to, you know, zap yourself or anything like that. So that's really convenient right there. But it goes from the battery to this switch and then to the bus bar, which again, this is your new positive terminal and this is your new negative terminal. It's sort of like the hub, like a train station. This is where everything goes before it gets routed out. So I did that with the positive, and I also did that with the negative that goes to this bus bar right here. And then you go from the bus bar, again, the negative and positive, to the inverter itself. And then the charge controller, I've got a 30 amp fuse right here. Kevin was telling me that that is not the most reliable fuse, a little breaker, but I will change that out in the future if that does fail on me. But that just cuts off power to this. So if I wanted to do anything with this, I can just cut off the power there. But again, the negative and positive go to that. And then I wanted to have the ability to put an AC charger right here. So I put on this fuse block, and this AC charger right here is just it's an ultra power one. It's not a real expensive one, but it's about eight. It says it's 10 amps, but I get about 8 or 9 out of it. So with the ability to plug this in right here, and this isn't plugged into the wall, but this AC outlet goes behind here, and it's sort of a mess behind there, but I'll clean that up later. And then it comes back through here and it goes into this AC port or this fuse box right here, which gives me the ability to put an AC port on there for charging this when I need to, if I've got electricity. Now, also with on this fuse block right here, I've got these couple of lights that are under here, which are pretty cool lights I got on Amazon, but pretty cool, just lights that are nice and flush with this unit right here, and I'll go over the shelf in a minute. But I put those on this fuse block as well. I've got this port right here, which is USB charging, and I'm also going to put a Type-C up here, which again will go into this fuse block. I'll just bring the wires in same way I did with this. But this gives me the ability to charge laptops, charge this right here if I wanted to. And then this little battery bank right here, I can charge that. So it gives me the ability to do a few different things on this unit. And it does have the fuses in here. So if anything, it misbehaves, it's not going to fry the whole system. That's why I have a fuse here, a fuse here, a fuse here, just to make sure, since this is going to live inside, that everything is working the way it's supposed to. Now, I also, this is the battery monitor that down here, it plugs into this up port on the Renergy battery, and it's a pretty cool little monitor. It's got, right now it's telling me I'm drawing 4.1 amps minus over there. It'll tell you what the state of charge is. It will tell you up here on top that at the current, let's see, I'm 86.7 full. If I'm drawing 4.1 amps, I can basically do that for 21 hours before this drains. So hopefully that goes down. Hopefully the sun comes out and I start charging this up a little bit. But this is a pretty cool unit right here. Renergy also has another battery monitor. You can put in a shunt here and then it'll give you a lot of information on your phone. I do have this BT1, which is hooked up right here on this charge controller, which gives you some information on what's going on with the battery. Right now, it's only charging at 0.19 amps. Like I said, the sun must be not be doing its job out there. It must be cloudy or something, but it tells you how much is coming into your system. Now, this battery, estimated battery charge, state of charge, 100%, this is completely unreliable and wrong 99.9% of the time, so don't even pay attention to that. But it's also got in here, it's got your history where you can look at some stats and see amp hours per day. It will give you a chart. I've only had this hooked up for a couple days, so there's not a lot of information. It just some useful stuff to let you know how much you're using, how much you're pulling in on average, and it'll help you get some calculations if need be. So a pretty decent little amp, and this comes with the charge controller itself. So once I got all of these hooked up, I've got the fuse block right here so I can put in AC appliances. I've still got three different places that I could put another, like I said, the Type-C USB charger that I want to put on here. Down here, I've got the solar that is hooked up, and this basically goes into the solar in right here. It goes around the back and then plugs into solar. This is nice because these Anderson power poles are really easy to disconnect and reconnect. Just makes it really simple to plug in the solar or unplug the solar when I need to. And same thing with the AC. These are Anderson power poles. So this one right here was a cigarette lighter output, but when I first installed this, I had it on that small dolly and it fit perfectly. But as you can see, this pole goes right behind there. So the outlets, I didn't want them getting jammed up on the metal. So I went ahead and took this out. I'm not sure what I'd use a cigarette lighter port for anyway. This is rated at 120 watts, not very much. So if I need one, I'll put another one up here if I need one in the future. So that's basically this setup right here. You've got the battery connected to the bus bars. The bus bars become your battery terminals, basically. And then you plug everything into this. So you've got your inverter connected to the battery. you've got your charge controller connected to the battery, and then you've got your fuse block connected to the battery, and everything, all of your accessories, your DC accessories, will come off of this fuse block, and there's a bunch of different types. Now, after I've put all this together, I decided to put a shelf on here, and I'll try to show you the shelf. I'll turn off Red Dawn here and then show you this up here. But with this shelf, I'm not quite done with this yet, but what I did was made this a little bit thicker because I wanted to put these lights in here, underneath here. But also, I'm debating on, the reason I haven't finished this yet is because I'm debating on how I want to do this lid. It's a pretty cool one, just a place to put, maybe you put some cords or something in here. But it's also, you know, maybe a good place to hide some things if this looks like it's nailed on. So I may put hinges on it, but I'm not, like I said, I'm not sure if I want to do that. I may just put a couple pieces of wood on the inside to make sure it just stays there nice and secure. Now with this, I'm also thinking about putting some braces on because even though this is pretty sturdy right here, because I've got the four bolts going through the back to keep this nice and sturdy, any sort of, you know, it's gonna withstand the weight of a TV. It's gonna withstand the weight of maybe a VCR if you wanted to put it up there. But anything heavier, it's going to eventually, you know, it's just not that sturdy. So if I put a couple braces on the side, that would help that out. Up here, I'm also going to install, like I was talking about earlier, some Type-C USB chargers and maybe one other thing, maybe that cigarette lighter port. I've got some room up here to, you know, make some modifications. So pretty cool little unit, pretty easy to build, to set up. The shelf, just a little bit of woodworking skill, you can make one of these, or you can do it without the shelf. Also with this, if you wanted to, and it's something that I thought about, but considering this is semi-temporary, I didn't want to go that route, but you can box this whole thing in and put these accessories on the outside of the box. So the stuff in here is hidden. You're not seeing all the wires. The reason I set it up this way is to sort of give you a visual representation of what I've got going on here. But if you closed all this off and just had the box, and had the box where maybe you could open it from the side or open the top up and get to all these things, you could have just these ports and just these monitors on the outside of the box and have all the wires and everything else on the inside of the box. You could put this port out here so you could plug in your solar. You'd probably want to pull the Renergy outside the box, the inverter or the charge controller outside of the box. That way you could see what's going on. But if you have the monitors, you don't really need that either. You'd also want to put a fan to make sure, especially if the inverter is inside the box, make sure it doesn't get too hot and all those things. But there's a lot of different things you can do. And it takes up, for this 1,000-watt little station right here, takes up a lot more room than a Jackery would or something like that. But the positive, I think, of all this is you have so much more customization, so much more ability to expand, ability to change things around, to fix something if it's broken. With a Jackery, once that battery goes dead or once a component inside dies, you're toast. You're at the beck and call of Jackery and their customer support, or Renergy and their customer support. And we all know how that goes from time to time. So by having the ability to diagnose it yourself, I really think it does take up a lot more room, but I think it's you know, much better than having one of those Jackeries, and they're great too, but this, I think, serves a different purpose. And again, like I said, this is eventually either going to go in the barn or go in the garage, so it's going to be on a wall, and maybe I do put it inside some sort of a case where I can just open it up and look at all this, and it's not a bunch of wires hanging out all over the place. You close that up, and I'm able to charge depending on how many solar panels I've got, how many watts on the inverter or you know, the DC appliances, all of that stuff, how many batteries I have. It's all expandable out there, and it's not, you know, something that's sitting on a dolly inside my room. The reason I like this is it's semi-portable. I don't know about how portable, but I could move this to the living room if I need to. I can move this up the stairs. I can lay this on the back, on its back, if I wanted to, because the good thing about these Life PO4 batteries is it doesn't matter like the old school batteries, whether they're on their side or not. You can put them however you want. So at any rate, that's my setup right here. If you've got any questions, any comments, anything like that, let me know. As I do a little bit more customization on this, I'm going to do some more videos. Once I put this in the garage or once I add more solar panels outside, I will do videos on that. But if you have any questions about this, I know it wasn't the most detailed description about what size wires you need and things like that, but I didn't want to go that route yet. I may do that in a future video. I know there's a few out there. City Prepper's got a great video about how to size your solar generator. But if you have any questions, let me know in the comments. And until next time, take care and prepare. We'll talk to you all later.
Son of a gun. Thanks, Denise. Muted again. At any rate, what I was talking about, I'm just going to go ahead and say the same damn thing I just said. At any rate, that's what my plans are for this solar generator. Now, Mario brought up a really good point, and now I've got to go back and find this, but Mario brought up a really good point about a refrigerator, that a 12-volt refrigerator. Here we go. A cigarette lighter port for your 12-volt refrigerator, which would be a really good idea. And then Tiger brought up the point that they get really hot, and I'm not sure that they can handle that many watts. That cigarette lighter port that I have on right there is only 120 watts. So that's probably sort of the same thing he's referring to. And then Mario also then responded, a 12-volt refrigerator that I'm referring to are smaller chest style. They take around 3 amps, so that's about 36 watts, which that is a perfect... I'm going to be looking, as soon as this show's over, I'm going to be looking into that, because that would be fantastic. Now, what I was saying during that was that DC takes up a lot less energy than AC. And along with that, you've got to think about, you've got to turn on the inverter. So if you had a mini fridge where you had to turn on the inverter, and running that 24/7 would take a lot of energy, whereas DC would take a lot less. And even without the cigarette lighter port, I could plug that into the fuse block that I have there, depending on the wattage. I can't remember what the wattage, what the rating is of that fuse block. But I could plug in, you know, something, especially something small like Mario's talking about there, that I could plug into DC. So don't be surprised in one of my next videos if I have one of those. A fantastic idea. Just something really cool to just keep plugged in there that doesn't take a lot of energy, that you would be able to store maybe just leftovers. Say you cook a meal and that meal's not going to get eaten until the next day or something, and you're rationing and doing things like that, maybe just being able to throw, just being able to chill that would be something cool to be able to do. So, or, you know, ice, like I was talking about, you know, ice would be a luxury. It would be fantastic in a situation where it was 90 degrees. So, yeah, Scott said big red light. Yeah. I need Lisa down here to slap me on the back of the head every time I do that, because as that video was playing right towards the end, I saw my little red light over here, and I was like, all right, I got to turn that off. But then got in my own head, and then I started talking. So at any rate, that's it on that. Like I said, I'm going to be doing a couple more videos in the future with how exactly. I'll be doing an article that details what sort of wires I used and why, as far as gauge and thickness and the fuses and things like that. And as I build this up and probably transfer it to my garage wall, like I was talking about in that video, I will be doing videos on that as well. So Charlie said, love the content. Cool. Yeah, as long as I'm not muted, right, Charlie? At any rate, what I want to do is, let's see if I can pull this up. I want to talk about this. Let me see if I can share my screen here. I want to talk about this post that Jammer put in our group about your prepper kryptonite. And again, this was something he saw. I can't remember what the name of the podcast is. Now I'm drawing a blank, but it is Prepper Talk Radio. That's who it is. Prepper Talk Radio. He was listening to their podcast a little while back, and I've got the link in the description below. But what he says right here is, let me put this on full screen. He says, here's a question for you guys to think about for the rest of the week. I know it made me think deeply when I heard the question asked today, and he heard it on the podcast. What is your kryptonite? What is the kryptonite of your preparedness plan? And he goes on to say here, mine would be my family. And I think a lot of people, it would be their family. That would be one thing that you would drop everything else go about that. He said, we all can't be there at all times to ensure security. After identifying your kryptonite, how do you minimize exposure to it? And this was just a fantastic question. And I look, Denise said, the show wouldn't be the same without the bloopers. Yeah. But I'm reading through this, there was a lot of really good comments on this that I want to go over. And I picked a few of them from Scott and a few other people. And I want to put those up right here and just sort of talk about those. In the chat, we still got a little bit of time here. If you guys, what is your prepper kryptonite? If you've got something in, that you want to put in there that we don't cover here, let me know and we can cover that as well. But the first one I want to talk about was Scott's comment. And Scott said here, he said, I was going to say peanut butter M&Ms, but he says, my weak link has to be that I'm spread really thin, trying to do all of my prepping and day-to-day living without any help. And he says, I'm okay with that, though. I prefer to work alone and have things done the way I want them done. I'm exactly the same way, which is sometimes makes things a little bit harder, but I really don't have anyone else to watch my six that I trust that is within reasonable distance away to provide any assistance in a pinch anyway. I'm constantly evaluating OPSEC to minimize the isolation problem. What I really want is a bunker and tunnels under my property, but that's probably a pipe dream for now. Or is it, he says. And that is one, I think, you know, to one extent or the other, we all sort of face that type of situation because unless you're like an all-American prepper in there, unless you have a really good prepping group, it's really hard. I've got acquaintances up here. Now, I don't know that I would really say friends. I got a couple friends up here, but in my neighborhood, got acquaintances. But as preppers, we have this dream, right, of being out in the middle of nowhere, away from people, and this the perfect situation, which is fantastic and it's great, but it also has its drawbacks, like Scott was talking about there. And regardless where we live, we all have those drawbacks, and it's that going it alone type thing, and having that group of people you can depend on if things go haywire would be super beneficial. And I think just from, and I'm sure Scott knows this, but just from identifying that and understanding that and knowing that, he is probably working on things to mitigate situations that could arise that he may not be able to handle, just him and his wife or his family or whatever, things that he can do to mitigate those. And I think that's sort of the whole point of all this, is figuring out what your, and I have to listen to the other guys' podcast to see how they went about talking about this. But I think that's the whole point, is trying to mitigate those things as much as possible that are going to be your kryptonite. That thing that is, if something happens, it's going to derail your plans. You're going to have to shift your focus to that and forget about all the other things. And that could lead to other vulnerabilities. So sometimes it's just not, it just really isn't an answer. So very, very good comment there on that one. The next one I've got here is Alpha Tango. And this one, he says, I'm constantly looking at areas where we are vulnerable. Barring a major economic windfall, and he said that won't happen, it might be a couple years before I can sleep well at night. Yes, we have all the supplies, but long-term solutions which are not required, that do not require replenishing, is where we fall short. Short-term, I'm talking about a year without having to worry about the basics. However, my concern is about the real Teotihuacan event. We're not getting any younger, and that's a very good point I want to go into. We're not getting any younger, and the thought of having to transport large quantities of water or wood, even if it's only a mile, is something I would not want to do for 10 years from now. He says, so in short, the answer is probably age and health. And I think that's one, I know that's one. That's one I think about all the time. That's one that all of us think about all the time, because as the years go by, our abilities start to decline, and there could be health issues, and there could be other things that, you know, these glasses right here, I'm having to read over here on this screen because it's large text and I can't see it over here. That's, you know, a bit of kryptonite. If I were to lose glasses and not have an extra, I've got a couple extra pair, but if I weren't able to get to those, that's some prepping kryptonite right there. But it's age and health is one of those that we don't have control over. You know, how all of that unfolds. I mean, we do to some extent. We can eat healthy. We can stay healthy. We've got, you know, medications. You know, that's another one that could be that kryptonite. Lisa takes blood pressure medications. And I know there's Jace and things like that. Maybe we'll talk about that when I have Lisa on. But there are things that the longer something goes on, those are only going to last so long. So there are those limitations as well. Denise said here, meds are a big problem, especially if you're old like me. Yeah, I think most of us, you know, we're not far behind, Denise. I'll just put it that way. Most of us are, as the years go on, all of a sudden you look back, 10 years have flown by with me anyway. I started this and 10 years have flown by and it's like, holy crap. Hopefully we last another 10 years. Scott said, absolutely, but still tons to learn. Yeah, Scott, thanks for the comment, Scott. That was great. Gun Pilot, I haven't read this, so hopefully this makes a little sense. Time between work, family, hobbies, and just daily life. I run short on time just to organize each day. Part of my prepping, I choose to get in better shape. That's another 1.5 hours of my day. Yeah, and I'll tell you what, that's one of those things, and I'm lacking in this. I'll put it that way. But that's one of those things that's something that is going to pay off in the end. Eating healthy, staying healthy, doing those things, because you're talking about maybe not having to take those medications. You're talking about your physical abilities taking longer to decline and things like that. So, very good point right there. So that was Alpha's comment. Next we got Plan B. Plan B says here, my kryptonite would be prepping indecisiveness. And this, the reason I brought this up is because this is almost me to a T as well, and probably a whole lot of people out there. But I only have so much disposable income that I can channel to prepping, and my priorities keep shifting as to what to put it towards. Saving for the big items I just want. Because life just can't go forward unless you have that. That's the inner child part of me. Yeah, I get that way too. When you see something, you're just like, oh man, that would be awesome. I need that. And you sit there and you justify it. But when you say yes to one thing, you're saying no to another thing. So there's that part of it right there. So, or he says, putting it towards smaller items that can actually accomplish something, but it takes me more time than it should to make the purchasing decision because of the bigger items keep calling me back. I just know I am the only one here that suffers from this issue. He must have meant, I just know I'm not the only one here that suffers from this issue, because you're absolutely not. I just need to squelch the inner child and need to make it a priority or a punch sheet to stick with it. And I absolutely agree. And I think, regardless, most of us, all of us, regardless of how good we try to be with all this stuff, and I'm sure there's some people out there that are just like, nope, I need this, this, and this before I even think about anything else. That's really hard for me to do because I am that impulsive type of person. I see something and it's like, especially doing videos and things, I'm like, oh, I could do a video on this. I could do, you know, it'd be so cool to do this and that. So yeah, it is that thing you sort of get pulled in all directions. And sort of along with this, it's not even just the buying stuff. It's there's so many different aspects of preparedness and so many different areas that you may call maybe not complete kryptonite, but those areas you fall short in that you've got to figure out. And it's like, do I do this first? Do I do that first? And then all of a sudden you hear something on the news or something happens here, something happens there. And you're like, okay, now I got to pivot this direction. And I got, you know, am I covered in this area if this happens? And then, you know, these days you look at 14 different directions and who knows? So that indecisiveness absolutely is a very good point right there. All right, so Jason's got one here, and I'm not going to read Jason's whole comment because that's super long. But what he was talking about in here, and I'll just sort of summarize it, and hopefully I get that what his point was that he was trying to get across. But his kryptonite would be lack of information. Being a middle-aged, good law-abiding citizen, I have an innate deferral to authority. As a youth, before the corruption of institutions that we see now, I was taught to trust the police. So he goes on talking about how you, in a disaster, in a crisis or something like that, you're going to need to get information, reliable, actionable information. And it's hard, even though it is in most of us to trust these people, or we need to be able to gather information from them. We need to, at the very least, listen to them. But it's harder and harder these days to figure out what is good information and what is not. You know, now, like I said, we need to listen to that information they give us, because they're going to be the ones in the know. They're going to be the ones that have the most critical information that we would need. Now, is that the information they have? Is that going to be the same information we get? And I think that's the challenging part right there, because we just don't know. So you've got to figure out how to wade through the, you know, what are they telling you? What's the real story? And I think I've always had a mistrust with the media and politicians and all that. But it really got bad right around the last election. And then you had the pandemic and all that, where everything was just full out in the open, blatant, just right, obvious, right in front of your face, as long as you were willing to look at it, where you could see all the different things, how they, you know, the propaganda, how they'd spin stories, how they tell you what they chose to report on, what they chose not to report on. All of those things really make me even, you know, more skeptical about all of this stuff than I ever was before. And I was pretty skeptical before. Now it's just a complete lack of trust. But at the same time, if something big happens, you are going to have to at least get that information, listen to that information from these people, and not, you know, and figure out what is actionable information and what could be just a bunch of horse crap. In this, he talked about how hopefully the local government and local authorities wouldn't be as corrupt as you know, the federal, basically the countrywide stuff. And I think that might be the case. Although if the local governments are following the marching orders and the local news outlets are following the marching orders of the bigger guys, then who knows at that point. But I think local law enforcement, local, those are, you know, your average everyday people. I think those are people that you could actually, that would be information that I would be more likely to trust than, you know, Joe Biden getting on the news or something and talking about what we need to do and why this is happening and all that blah, 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 BS. All politicians, not just him, all of them. But that was a very good point with that, is that you try to gather as much information as you can, but it's got to be actual information and it's got to be correct information. Otherwise, you're not really doing yourself any favors. And there's a lot of things as preppers, we try to mitigate those. You've got ham radio, you've got different, you know, we talk to different preppers and we find out stories that the average person that isn't paying attention to the stuff that we pay attention to doesn't even see, doesn't even care about on a daily basis. So very good comment right there. The last one I've got here is from David. And this one is, luckily, this is a short one. He says here, my biggest weakness is that not only my family not being on board with prepping, but my job has me traveling across the country away from family and preps. And that is a very good comment right there, because I think a majority of people in preparedness, preppers, are sort of going it alone. You wouldn't think so when you get on YouTube and you see people like me, or Grumpy Acres, or these people that are, you know, the family, the husband and wife team. Yeah, most people on YouTube have that team going. The average person, I don't know that really, you know, it is really the case. I know there are some, you know, some spouses tolerate it, but aren't really on board with it. Some just don't want to have anything to do with it. And that makes it a really a big challenge. And that is some preparedness kryptonite right there, because not only are you trying to prepare and get things ready, you've got to do it for everybody else too, because that goes back to what Jammer's comment was in the beginning about his family being his kryptonite. You've got to make sure you take care of them, regardless of anything else. That's your family and that's what you're going to do. I'd be the same way. You know, it everything else would fall off the table. Everything else is irrelevant until I get that figured out with the kids and with Lisa and all that stuff. So that's a very good point. And then the traveling one is also, that's a challenge as well, because you are away from home. And when you're talking about that family, and I've thought about this, like Liberated Lady travels around, Brian travels around, Brian Duff, Mind for Survival, they travel around, and that, the RV prepper. That is, in some aspects, that's an actual benefit, because when I was talking about the solar stuff and the off-grid, you've got a leg up. People like that have a leg up on people that are you know, in one spot. And the traveling around, being able to be mobile, could be a leg up. At the same time, and this really doesn't go into what David was talking about, I'll get back to that, but at the same time, you don't have the room or the ability to stockpile large amounts of food, large amounts of water, things like that. So there's trade-offs with all of this stuff. And this is, you know, regardless of where you are in preparedness, your geographic location, your how far along, how long you've been doing it, there's trade-offs we've got with everything. Where you live, the size of your home, your income, all those things. We need to sort of just balance everything and figure out, and that's why it's important to figure out what your kryptonite is, because you balance as much as you can, and you focus on the things that are really going to be a detriment, and try to get those, increase those as much as you possibly can, and then, you know, cross your fingers after that. I mean, there's only so much we can do about a lot of things. So, but as far as traveling, I want to get, I've had a couple comments, and it may be even David that sent me an email on this. I've had some comments about, you know, some advice for people traveling. I am not, you know, I can spew some stuff out here, but I'd like to get somebody, maybe I'll get RV Prepper back on again and talk to him. But I want to get somebody on that really knows that situation. I want to get somebody on that does it and has some tips and guidance for, you know, people like David, people that are doing this stuff on the road. I know Brian also is you know, a good source to go to with that as well. But I'd like to get somebody on. I'd love to do that show, but I want to do it with somebody that knows more about what they're talking about, that's actually lived it, not just, you know, researching it and, you know, talking about what I think I would do and things like that. So but very good comment by David. I think that's the number one kryptonite right there is your family. Now, what Scott was talking about, you know, trying to get things done without a really big support group. And then the information, I mean, all of that is really important when you're talking about navigating any sort of, even if it's just an emergency or a disaster type situation. It's all things that, And we all have different things, and I haven't looked in the chat in a while. So if anybody has put a comment in there or what their kryptonite it is, just go ahead and throw it in there again and I'll pull it up. But yeah, it's one of those things you really, it's a really good question to ask yourself. What is that one thing that would derail my plans? What is the worst thing? Not just the one thing, because there's more than just one thing, but that worst case scenario type thing that would just cause you to drop everything, and or one vulnerability, I suppose, a vulnerability that could be picked on by, you know, somebody trying to come get your stuff or things like that. What is the first thing they would try to do that would have the biggest impact on your situation? And then think about those and then try to build on those, try to cover up those weaknesses as much as you can anyway. And like I said, with health issues and things like that, it could be damn near impossible to get that stuff done. But you've got to do what you've got to do. Like I said earlier, you got to do what you got to do. And then you cross your fingers right after that. All American Prepper said, me and Little Miss Prepper lived in a car for 2 years. Yeah, you know what? I've not for 2 years. I've been in that situation though, and it's, you know what? It's a situation that sucks, but it can be done. It's a, you know, just like any SHTF situation or even like All American Prepper, the way he lives, it is perfectly wonderful to him. He's happy doing it the way he's doing it. He wouldn't do it any other way. Other people would look at what he's doing and think, oh God, no, I would never do that. I need my house. I need running water. I need this and that, all these things. But it is all doable. So yes, it would suck. Yeah, and that's why we need to basically, you know, the old saying, embrace the suck. Yes, it would suck, but it can be done. And eventually you get used to that stuff. And eventually, like I said in the beginning of this, it's highly unlikely that something is going to happen that lasts 2 years, 3 years. You know, that Teotihuacan Mad Max type situation, that is really unlikely. What's more likely is that year or less time frame where things are just upside down. And, you know, as far as economy, who knows, that could be even longer than that. But that really large scale SHTF is highly unlikely. So when you think about these other ones that are smaller than that, that's where that's where my mind is anyway, when I think about these situations, even though with movies and things like that, that we always tend to go for that large scale thing. It's different than that. And just because it's small scale as far as time frame doesn't mean it can't be highly dangerous. And it doesn't mean that a whole lot can't happen in that little time frame. I mean, I think if you're talking some sort of EMP, you're talking some sort of disaster situation, military or terrorist attack or something that takes a terrorist attack that takes the grid down, something like that, it could get really dangerous right after that. And that's the time we need to really, you know, that's where most of our energy, as far as when we think about our prepping kryptonite and we think about where we should, what we need to do, that's where most of our energy should go, because we can't really, you can't say after 3-4 months what's going to be happening, because the one thing that kicked everything off could be completely irrelevant by month three. And you're thinking about a whole different game, a ball game right there. So, Denise said here in the chat, that's why it's a good idea to turn your power off and see where you suffer the most. Yeah, and I've said this before. We've done that before. We tried to do it a whole weekend. Didn't happen because the kids were not having it. But it really does. One, it gives you an opportunity to test out your different supplies, test out your plan, see if it's actually as good out here as it is on paper or up in your head. And you get to test out all the different supplies you have and see how life, you know, embrace the suck, how life is going to suck in a situation like that. And you also gain the understanding that, yes, it is doable. It is going to suck, but it is doable. Almost like a camping trip. Now, a couple days doing something like that, like Denise was talking about, it's a whole lot less stress. So it's, I don't want to say enjoyable, because after a few hours, after about 6-8 hours, I didn't mind it. But after about 6-8 hours, it gets pretty stressful because you got, you know, these people yelling at you and things like that. But it is a whole lot less stressful than the real stuff. So it is a perfect opportunity and situation to, you know, test out some of your stuff, see what things are really going to be like, or get an idea of what they're going to be like and all that stuff. So, yeah. Absolutely. All right. So I think I am done here tonight. Very good show, Jammer. I appreciate you. I appreciate you letting me know about that podcast, because I had never listened to them before. I watched a little bit of their YouTube channel today, and looks pretty cool. I might even, I said this earlier, I don't know if you were here, I might even reach out to them and see if they want to do a live stream or something together. And for everyone listening, that's Prepper Talk Radio. They did a podcast on your prepper kryptonite, which I am going to listen tomorrow. I can't say whether it was, I'm sure it was good. Jammer's a good, he's got good taste as far as, I mean, he listens to this show, right? He's got good taste. So I'm going to give it a listen tomorrow and probably listen to those guys quite a bit. Go watch a few of their videos. They've actually got, I closed the tab. They've actually got 250 some videos on their YouTube channel. So they've got a lot of content over there. And I will put the link to that in the show notes. I've got the link to their website, and they've got links to all their different stuff on their website as well. But appreciate you bringing that up, Jammer. That was awesome. That was long-winded way of saying thank you. Everyone else in the chat, I appreciate you all joining in tonight. Gunpilot, Denise, Tiger, everyone, a lot of different people. Everyone that posted comments on that as well, appreciate you. And if you guys have any questions about the solar build or any of the stuff, just send me an email to dale@survivalsprepper.net. I'll get back to you. Like I said, I'm going to be doing a couple videos on this when I go, and I'll go through more detail. I just didn't want to put it in that video because it gets kind of blah after a while. All the numbers and all the math and all that, unless you're absolutely looking for that video, then it's, you know, it just kind of gets boring. I just wanted to show how it's done, and then I'll go through all the detail later. So, Gun Pilot, great show. Denise said, thanks, Jammer. Appreciate it. Yeah, I appreciate all you guys. Like I said, all three of you, you guys are in the group. I'll be doing in the next week or so, now that I've got some things sort of, I got some time on my, I've got a little more time on my hands anyway. I've got this whole project done. I'll be doing something in that group, whether that's a group meeting, whether that's live videos, things like that, and doing more over at the Bug Out location. So appreciate everyone, all of you guys, whether you're in the group or not, whether you listen to the podcast and all that stuff, appreciate everyone. With that, though, I am going to get out of here tonight. Take care and prepare, and we will talk to you all later.